Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association.
Mark Goulston is a psychiatrist, business consultant, executive coach, and FBI and police hostage negotiation trainer. A best-selling author whose books include Get Out of Your Own Way and Get Out of Your Own Way at Work. He writes a column on leadership for Fast Company and Solve Anything with Dr. Mark for Tribune Media Services, and is frequently called on to share his expertise by the media, including The Wall Street Journal, Harvard Business Review, Fortune, Newsweek, Time, Reuters, NPR, CNN, Fox News, and the Oprah and Today shows. Mark is also the author of Just Listen, a best-selling book on developing your listening skills. Mark, welcome to AMA Edgewise.
So glad to be here.
If you don't mind, I'm just going to jump in and we'll see where we go here. How do I get my boss to stop and just listen? Now, for example, now today he talked on a conference call to our team and we just could not get a word in edgewise. He talked, and he wouldn't listen to us. We're very frustrated and we all walked out feeling worse than before we walked into the meeting. He just doesn't get it.
Well, you might not be able to do this with all bosses, but if you can focus on something that would get better results for him and the team, you might have an entree to have a conversation with him. And so what you'd want to do is meet with him one-on-one and say, I have some ideas about how we could get better results. And I have some observations. Can I share them with you? Now, sometimes you'll have bosses will say no, or they'll say yes, and you know they mean no. So this is not for everyone. But if they say yes, then what you want to do is you want to flatter them. And one of the ways to do that is think of something that they're really smart about. And say to them, do you know how smart you are and talented in this particular area? And be specific, so it's not a generic. And many people are going to feel embarrassed by that. They're not going to refute it. And he's going to say, well, thank you. I think I'm reasonably smart. He could say, the reason I'm bringing it up is because I think you owe it to that to not do anything that distracts from it. And what I've noticed is that sometimes when you're talking and other people aren't able to speak, it distracts from how smart you are. And something else that I'm aware of that you may not be aware of is, and I've learned this, is that whenever we're talking, we kind of trigger flashbacks in people's heads, and they're not even aware of it. So if someone had a parent or a brother or sister who just talked all the time and didn't let anyone in, there's a good chance that when you're talking, you're triggering that in that person's head, and that's going to further distract them from just how smart you are. And I wouldn't be having this conversation with you if it wasn't for the fact that I think you have a responsibility to how smart you are to not do anything that distracts from it. And I didn't mean to be rude. And if you'd like, I would be happy to be a stakeholder. And if you want to check in with me, you know, how I think you did, I would love to do that for the team. I would love to do it for you.
Now, this isn't me speaking here, but let's just say this is person X and this is their opinion. I have no patience for people at work that complain and whine. They are wasting my time with their need to go on and on and on about nothing. I just want to yell at them to shut up and get busy. Now, you suggest that I actually listen to these people? Now, if I do, I will never get rid of them. So I won't be able to get anything done. What are your suggestions? How can I make them get the point?
Well, my book, Just Listen, has all kinds of tips in it, and there's also tips for dealing with difficult people. Now, I can tell from your head of steam that you need to do something to calm down because you already have two strikes on them in your mind.
True.
And one of the ways you might want to confront them is to say, I need your help with something because I'm getting close to tuning you out. And it makes no sense for me to have anyone on my team or anyone I work with where I am close to tuning them out, because the next step is I'm going to want to avoid them. And that makes no sense. And then you want to be specific. You don't want to attack their character. And you can say, and the reason that I'm close to tuning you out is that when these situations happen and you complain about them or you whine about them, I not only feel my own reaction to it, but I feel other people's reaction to it. And I think it causes people to root against you. And I have no control over it. You do.
Mark, there are so many great tips in your book. One thing I want to ping you on here is the impossibility question. That particular technique, how can I use this technique, for instance, like with my boss, to get her to become more open? I'm afraid that it seems like you have to be a manager, not really an employee, but a manager to make something like this work.
I think you can say to you, again, if you preface any conversation with someone above you with something that will get us better results, everybody is measured on results. And so that I think any manager, if you preface it that way, is going to hear you out. And you can say, I want to ask you a question that I think would get not only better results, but phenomenal results. And then if they say, go ahead, you could say, what would be something that would be impossible for us to do as a team, and maybe even impossible for you to do as the head of the team, but if we could do it, it would exponentially increase our results and performance, but it's impossible. Now, the person might say, well, what do you, you could say, just humor me. And then they may come up with something. Well, it would be impossible for us to be able to do this, or it would be impossible for us to form a relationship with one of our competitors, but they really have something we need, and it's taking too long for us to develop. But if we could do that, it would save us time, and I think it could actually be a win-win. And then what you say is, well, what would make that possible? The power of the impossibility question, it's a way of avoiding yes, but. Because too often when you suggest something to someone that is outside of what they're normally doing, they'll say, yes, but we can't do that. Mm-hmm. Yes, but that's impossible. Yes, but we have other things. And so what you want to do is not get into one of those arguments that frustrate you and cause you to think, why did I even bring it up? And the impossibility question is a great way to bypass that.
Now, I'm personally open to the concept of a power thank you and the power apology. I must admit, though, that no leader, or for that matter, anyone where I work, fesses up to anything, okay? If I use this technique, will I start looking soft or like a brown noser? But on the other hand, what do I do if they just turn around and they laugh at me, or even at the other extreme, if they spit on me?
Preface it this way. I heard recently that one of the worst things you can do in life is to take for granted the people you're thankful to while you're focusing on all the pains in the rear and dealing with that. And when I heard that, I realized it's true. And so I'm going to try and get into the habit of noticing good stuff and exceptional stuff. I'm not going to turn into a Pollyanna like a parent who tells their kid who strikes out three times, attaboy. But I'm going to get in the habit of noticing exceptional work and noting it, because I don't want to be a person who just focuses on the negative in life and be that kind of person who says the thanks they should get is they have a job. I don't want to be that guy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the very interesting, and actually one of my favorite techniques in your book is moving yourself from the, I think we called it the oh fudge, to okay. Could you talk a little bit more about how I can do this at work when I you know, literally have my last nerve stepped on? I seem to go off the deep end, and then I regret it.
Well, one of the reasons people vent is they want to calm themselves down so that they don't act out on what they're feeling and make a mess of their life. And so venting helps you do that. The problem is when you're venting, especially in the workplace, it's stressful for other people to hear. You know, you remind them of a family member who has a short fuse. You remind them of a complainer. And what the OF to OK thing is being able to go through it in your mind, but not outwardly. And the steps are, when something happens that catches you by surprise and it's a negative, what you say to yourself is, oh, fudge. Now, you can be more creative and think of other words with different amounts of letters, but what oh, fudge is, this happened. I can't believe this happened. This upsets the apple cart. Then take a deep breath and let it go. And that's very important, and to be honest, the whole field of mindfulness is trying to get people to take a deep breath and let it go so that they don't do things stupid, that they don't act out on their stress. And after you say, oh, fudge, take a deep breath, let it go, the next thing you want to say is, oh, no. And oh, no means it happened. It's not a bad dream. It's real. It's something to be dealt with. It's the last thing I want to have to deal with. Oh, no. And then take a deep breath. Then after that, a good thing to say is, oh, geez, G-E-E-Z or A-W, aw, geez. And what that means is you're letting in, well, looks like it happened, looks like it's a mess, looks like it's a distraction, looks like I'm going to have to take away time that I don't have to focus on it. But, you know, you're allowing it to be in. And what's great is while you're doing this all in your head, you haven't acted out, and actually, you look like someone who can really handle it. And people notice that because there's many more people who can't. Then after the aw, geez step, the next thing you say to yourself is, oh, well. And oh, well is, it's mine. It's my responsibility. If I reach out to other people, they have other stuff on their plate. They're going to give me an excuse that's going to upset me more. And so the oh, well is acknowledging it and accepting that it's your responsibility. And then you take another deep breath and you think of, okay, so what's the first step that I can do to deal with this upsetting the apple cart? And I think a good thing to think of, what's the first thing that I can do that's under my control that I don't have to ask anyone else's permission? So what call can I make? What change can I make? Whatever it is, what's in your power? And then when you realize what that is, you go to, okay, let's do it.
So, Mark, it's competitive out there in the workplace, and even in social life, it can be extremely competitive out there. You know, and if you let people do it, they'll run right over you. Is there a secret to getting through to absolutely anyone?
Well, I think the key here is you have to find out what are your no-deal values for. Now, there are some people who love the game, who love to be competitive, who love throwing other people under the bus, who not only love winning, they love you losing. And those are their values. And this is really a time to ask yourself, what's important to me? And if you find yourself dreading going to work regularly, there's a good chance that work is out of alignment with your values. One of my favorite books, which didn't get as much play as it deserved, was a book by Susie Welsh called 10-10-10. And what she talked about is that when you're dealing with a situation and you have to make a decision, ask yourself, if I make a certain decision, how will I feel about it 10 minutes from now, 10 months from now, and 10 years from now? And the 10 minutes is something that you have to deal with the immediate thing and whether you can handle it. And one of my favorite examples is when she was a single mom before she married Jack Welsh. She had mentioned that there was one time when she was going to have a birthday party for one of her kids, and then she had to go in for work. And so the choice was have her kid be upset, but go into work, and then 10 months later get a promotion and be a better provider. And so her decision was, well, the 10 minutes is going to be hectic, but 10 months from now, I'm going to be a better provider, and so I'll deal with that. What she said, and I think this is what I would address the person asking this question, she said the toughest thoughts are 10 years from now. And that's when you're taking a walk on a beach and you're thinking about some of the major things in your life, and you say to yourself, if I'm here 10 years from now, how would I feel about that? And Susie's very transparent, and she said that's when she decided she needed to get a divorce from her first marriage. She realized, I can't be here 10 years from now. So I would recommend the person who's really upset by this to take a good look at that. So the listening here is listening to yourself.
Mark, can you talk to us about this idea of renting an adult? And can we utilize this, you know, at work, on the job? And can we do it in such a way that we don't sound too patronizing like a well-known TV psychologist?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when I crossed over from being a clinical psychiatrist to a consultant, my story is I did house calls to dying patients and their families. And it was the 11th hour, and it was a real mess. And for some reason or other, I was able to be the adult and get everyone on the same page in hours that they'd never been able to do. And that's how I got into the work world, because people said, can you come into our business? If a founder died, they'd say, can you come into our business and help us do what you did here in hours that we'd never been able to do? And I remember saying, well, I deal with backstabbing, politics, chips on the shoulder. You got any of that? And they laughed. They said, that's all we have, because they didn't have any adults supervising it. Mm-hmm. I think one of the ways to bring it up, again, a lot of it depends on your tone. One of the things that I talk about when I talk about leadership is I'm very big on having a declarative tone versus an explanatory tone. It was the declaration of independence. It wasn't the explanation of independence. And so it doesn't matter what the words are, even if they're namby-pamby. I think if you were to say, we need some adult supervision around here, and if we don't get it soon, we're going to blow some opportunities that more than a few people are going to be a tad upset about. So how do we go about providing adult supervision? And it's a way of sort of standing into the chaos and taking charge of it. I remember I was coaching a COO of a technology company in New York, and what was happening is the sales department and the technology department were killing each other. And the technologist, who wasn't a salesperson, wasn't kind of one of those go-for-the-jugular people, and the salespeople were so rude to them that the technology person would say, I'm going to quit. Mm-hmm. I can't stand the way they treat me. And so I coached the COO. I said, they need adult supervision, and you're the COO. The CEO doesn't want to provide it. That's why I hired you. And what I coached them to do is I want you to, in a firm way, like you're displeased but not angry, you call a meeting of the IT person and the salesperson. You bring them in the room. And you walk into the room, not conciliatory, but clearly like you're having a bad day. And what you say to them in this tone of voice is, next week, we have a potential new customer, which will be the biggest that we've ever had in the history of our company. And if we blow it, I'm going to be more than a little upset. And so you guys work it out. Do you hear me? I've got work to do, and then I told them to leave the room. Mm-hmm. They totally pulled together.
Yeah.
So adult supervision isn't necessarily namby-pamby.
Right.
It's what I call taking charge without being controlling or judgmental, and that's exactly what he did.
Now, you mentioned narcissists in your book. Can you elaborate a little bit more on how to work with narcissists?
One of the most difficult things about narcissists is what they trigger in other people. And one of the ways difficult people, including narcissists, get the better of us is if we consider ourselves a decent person, they can push us into our rage. And when we're pushed into our rage, we start having fantasies and we start thinking of doing things in retaliation, which kind of scare us. And so actually one of the ways that not just narcissists, but the incessant whiners, complainers, anybody who engages in behavior that's so appalling to us threatens to hijack our amygdala, which I talk a lot about in the book. And when your amygdala, which is in the middle of your emotional brain, gets hijacked, it throws you into your more primitive fight or flight brain. And from there, there's a good chance that you're not going to make a good decision. And so one of the ways to deal with narcissists is when you're dealing with them, never expect them not to be that way. Mm-hmm. There's a saying, I'll change it, narcissist me once, shame on you. Mm-hmm. Narcissist me twice, shame on me. Mm-hmm. And what that means is you can't expect everyone to be flexible and adaptive. And so I would suggest making a list, not just of the narcissist, but all the people that I call high maintenance. Mm-hmm. And high maintenance people are people that are difficult to please and easy to upset, and you walk in eggshells with them. So know who they are ahead of time. And when you're dealing with them, hold a little bit of yourself back, because at some point in the conversation, they're going to act that way. And by the way, one of the reasons they act that way is because it normally always works, because they know if they can push a calm person to the edge of wanting to kill them, that person's going to be spending all their energy trying to calm themselves down. Mm-hmm. So if you expect them to do it, then when they act that way internally, and even a little externally, you can smile and say to yourself, dang, there they go again. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, if you do that right at the time when they're supposed to bully you and you kind of smile, you'll feel so much centered, and what will happen is it will disrupt them and it will disarm them. And they may even say, what are you smiling at? And there's all kinds of things you can learn and just listen, but some of the things might be, I was smiling because I was just thinking there's always a time in our conversations when this part of your personality comes out. And when it comes out, what happens afterwards is hardly productive. And I was just smiling because it happens every time. And if you show humor like that, they mm-hmm. won't know what to do with mm-hmm. it. Like, mm-hmm. well, you're not upset and wanting to kill me? No, it's amazing. It happens every time. Mm-hmm. You're like the buses. And if you can have humor with someone mm-hmm. like that, mm-hmm. what'll happen is you will then see them percolate and you will feel centered. Mm-hmm. This is delectable.
And the last question here, this is a bit of a scenario. Let's just say there's this person who's been working very long hours at work and they're on edge all the time, and people they work with are also kind of angry, and they had to work through the holidays and the anger is just building and building and building. And, you know, it seems on the face of it, everyone has a good reason to be angry. How do you deal with all this anger? It just sounds like team rage.
Well, there's studies that show that when you can give people words that match what they're feeling, it lessens amygdala activation by a third. There's a psychologist at UCLA, and he says when people can state what they're feeling, they calm down. That's the whole basis of the oh fudge to okay thing. You know, when you find the right word for what you're feeling, what happens is you calm down. Mm-hmm. And so what you're dealing with is people who aren't calm and they feel overwhelmed. And I think one of the ways to deal with them individually is to approach them and say, this has been a tough holiday season when everyone else was relaxing and everybody else was having a good time. You were getting more and more on your plate and more overwhelmed with less and less support. So let me ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how close are you to being at your wit's end? And just even saying that, and they're feeling understood and feeling felt, they're going to say, well, what do you mean? Well, wit's end is I've had it, and it's turn in resignation time. Start looking for another job.
Right.
Or it could be, I've had it. I need a break. I need to just get something off my chest. Mm-hmm. Maybe I got to go out and vent or something. Maybe I got to go out and do something. But what are we dealing with? If 10 is, I should expect your resignation tomorrow, mm-hmm. and I would understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, and 1 is the happiest day you've ever had in your career, which, you know, we're hopefully aiming towards, but we're like a lot of organizations where there's bureaucracy, and that's more of an ideal that we visit too infrequently. So what are we dealing with here? And then if they say anything other than a 10, and then you get them to keep talking. Well, if they say 8, say, what makes it an 8? Huh. And one of the ways to actually show them incredible understanding, you could say, okay, has it ever been a 10? And what will happen is they're going to be calming down. Mm-hmm. And then if you say, can you give me an example of a 10? And when you can ask someone to basically tell you how bad has it ever gotten for them, mm-hmm. then you're able to say, that must have been awful. How'd you get through it? Mm-hmm. And so what you're doing is you're inviting them to sort of get all kinds of stuff off their chest. You're being understanding. You're being complimentary. If they give you anything less than a 10, you can say, so if that was an 8 and 10 is really awful, what would need to happen right now that would turn the 8 into a 7 and then a 6, and mm-hmm. you know, and you start to feel okay. And what better not happen so that the 8 becomes a 9 and a 10?
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking to Mark Goulston, author of Just Listen. Mark, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, and thanks for listening.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.